Today on the In All Kinds of Weather forecast, the Gator basketball season ends in pretty upsetting fashion to the Colorado Buffaloes, and more specifically to KJ Simpson on a game-winning jumper. But it wasn't necessarily that last shot that has Gator fans talking. It has a lot more to do with that shot and some of the officiating that went into that loss, 102 to 100. We'll talk about all that and more on today's show. This is the In All Kinds of Weather forecast. Welcome back to the In All Kinds of Weather forecast. I am your host, Neil Schulman. You can follow me on Twitter at All Kinds Weather and on Instagram at All Kinds Weather Blog. Also follow the show on Twitter at IAKW Forecast. And as you may have noticed, we are a lot more active on YouTube now. More shows are coming rapid fire. So if you haven't already done so, be sure to smash that subscribe button down below, hit that like button, and be sure to comment your thoughts on what we're discussing today. And today what we're discussing is the Gator basketball season and its conclusion, a rather abrupt conclusion for many Gator fans. As we all know by now, Florida season ended to the Colorado Buffaloes in the round of 64. Of course, Colorado was one of the last four teams into the field. A lot of fans liked Florida's chances in that matchup. I could see why. I personally would have much preferred Boise State because the Broncos can't really score, but it was, you know, perfectly logical, perfectly fair opinion to say, I'd rather Colorado because we're bigger than them and Boise will just muck up the game. I grant you Gator fans out there that wanted Boise State to be our opponent. That's a perfectly logical take. I have no issue with it. Unfortunately, the reason why I did not want Colorado, the fact that they can score points in bunches, did play out. That did prove to be what ended Florida's season, or at least part of it. I was worried about the fact that Colorado came into that game shooting 39.4% from three on the year. They drop 102 on us. So the game, it was a fun game. It was a really fun basketball game from a pure basketball standpoint. The fact that Florida built an early lead to Colorado charging back in no time. The fact that Eddie Lampkin, again, this is not from a Gator standpoint. This is just from I like basketball standpoint. A. Lampkin was fun to watch go to work. He had a big game against the Gators in the paint. The fact that it seemed like the Gators were dead, Walter Clayton put the game on his back, put the team on his back, I should say, and brought the Gators back into the game. Florida was down 97 to 90 with 1:26 left, a three-score game with less than a minute and a half to go. And then Walter Clayton hits an and one, and then a deep three, and then an even deeper three to tie the game with 7 seconds to go. And then, as we all know, KJ Simpson hits the game-winning jumper to win the game for the Buffs. From a box score perspective, from a purely box score perspective, that's how the game went down. High scoring game, two great offenses, nice comeback at the end by one team, but then the team that was ahead for most of the second half pulled it out. If you just looked at the box score, or even if you just watched the highlights on YouTube, probably thinking, okay, fun game. Colorado just had one more shot in them and must have sucked for the Gators to lose. But that is not what Gator fans are talking about. That is not how this game is ultimately going to be remembered for a number of reasons. Gator fans are probably not going to remember Walter Clayton's 33 points or KJ Simpson going 7 for 12 from the field, or even the fact that Florida actually had a double-digit lead early in this game and blew it, finding themselves down by even more than that and erasing that even bigger deficit in the second half. No, it's going to be remembered for something different. Not for the players on the floor, which is sad because there were a lot of great ones on the floor. Cody Williams, Tristan Da Silva, Walter Clayton, Tyree Samuel, all great players on this floor. Not what the game is going to be remembered for. And before I really tear into the officials, I should put out a disclaimer. It's the same disclaimer I put out there after the Georgia baseball series a year ago, when an umpire named Brian DeBrower ejected Florida pitcher Brandon Neely for nothing more than a come on or let's go and a fist pump at his own dugout. Not the Georgia guys, at his own dugout. Got him tossing the game. Brian DeBrower, name of the umpire who did that. So I'll say now what I said then. And the disclaimer is just being blunt. I could not be a ref. I see that. I just admit that openly. I couldn't do that job. It is a difficult, difficult job. I did it for one summer at a sleepaway camp, and I just couldn't put up with it. I just couldn't do it. I'm not cut out for it. I would probably fight the coaches and the players and their parents if they ever gave me lip. I just am not cut out for it. So it is a difficult, difficult job, and I do have respect and admiration for those who put themselves in that position, even though I may not express it very often. I do want to put it out there that I do have respect for those who are out there. It is difficult to do. For all the criticism I hurl at the officials, again, I do empathize with them. It's not easy. I'll even say this. I don't think that they get paid enough. I don't think they get paid enough. And clearly they don't. Obviously they don't, because 99% of these guys have other full-time jobs that pay their bills. So I don't think the NCAA and their respective conferences pay referees enough. And unfortunately for Florida, you get what you pay for. You pay for shit and you get shit. That's how it works. That's supply and demand. That's if you pay for a Spirit Airlines flight, don't be surprised when you can't even get a glass of water without paying for it. And meanwhile, your fellow passengers start fighting. You want to pay an extra $80 to fly the same route on Delta or United or even JetBlue, you're not going to face those problems. And you can make that analogy with anything in life. If you want to go about paying the absolute bare minimum for things, go ahead, save yourself a few bucks, but don't be surprised when things don't go swimmingly for you. And that brings us back to this game. There were three referees on this floor named Bert Smith, Owen Short, and Eric Curry. This is publicly accessible information, by the way. This is available to see for anyone on the box score of the game on both the University of Florida site, the University of Colorado site, and the NCAA's official site. It's out there for anyone to see. There's no doxing here. This is all publicly accessible information. There were some calls from the first of those two guys, Bert Smith and Owen Short, that I thought were iffy. I thought that they were close calls that benefited Colorado. The most egregious of which was this one continuation call where I thought, okay, I didn't see it that way. You saw it a different way than I did. It ultimately did feel like it was a very generous call for Colorado, but it also felt like it felt within the realm of logic to call it that way. One of those where I could say, I disagree with your opinion, but ultimately it was reasonable, even though I disagree with your opinion. That was how I thought about most of the officiating in the first half. It wasn't really great. It didn't seem like it was super fair or even, but it did feel like the calls were not so ridiculous that I thought that there was something fishy going on. I thought it was just, we weren't getting the calls. Colorado was getting every break. We weren't, but it didn't feel outright ridiculous. That changed in the second half. The midway point of the second half specifically, when the officiating went from just plain bad to, okay, now I'm getting suspicious here. What's going on here? That's when the refs took over the game. I cannot show the plays themselves on the show for copyright reasons. The NCAA and March Madness are very, very protective over their IP, over their intellectual property. But I will give you timestamps. So you can go out on YouTube, find the full games yourselves, and check them out. About 10-10 to go in the second half, Riley Kugel slams the ball to the ground. He swats away a layup like a volleyball spike from Javon Hadley of Colorado. Refs call a foul. May have been the slightest bit of contact on the arm. It was at most a glancing touch, a graze maybe, and the refs had been letting that go all game for both sides. They've been allowing that amount of contact all and more than that all night. And even the color commentator, Stan Van Gundy, if you can find the full game, you can find like 2 hour version of it where they don't cut anything out. You can listen to the commentary or go to my Twitter at All Kinds of Weather. As I mentioned, I've got that in the bad calls against Florida thread. You can hear Stan Van Gundy, the commentator, making a point on the telecast to say, yeah, I have no idea where the foul was. He goes out on a limb and says, yeah, I have no clue where that foul was. Hadley made one free throw, missed the other one. That's one free point for Colorado, thanks to the refs. Okay. Then we go to about 7:45-ish to go. I think the exact timestamp was 7:43, if I'm not mistaken. Alex Condon of Florida whistled for another very ticky-tack foul on Eddie Lampkin on a layup, which gives him an and one. Todd Golden, at this point, is beside himself and lets the officials have it. And of course, because Eric Curry's feelings are made of glass, technical foul on Todd Golden, which actually I will say I do understand that. If you're going to be just pure shit at your job, you might as well double down on your shitty calls and ride your own missed calls all the way home. Like, I do get that, I guess. Curry either knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that he was wrong and didn't care because as the dictator of the situation, he wanted to put his foot down on his worthless subjects, or genuinely thought he was correct. And I think this might be worse. Genuinely thought he was correct and thus similarly wanted to make an example out of someone who dared question his holiness, his ruling. Either way, three free points for Colorado, first on the free throw from Lampkin, and then, or first on the technical free throws, and then Lampkin hits the additional free throw. So worth pointing out, also, Todd Golden made a mention of this in the postgame presser too. He's gotten three technical fouls in his entire life as a coach. Eric Curry has given him two of those three. So fun little fact there. He and Curry have a history and it's not really a pleasant one, but in any case, an official making some personal beef, the spotlight focus of the NCAA tournament is problematic at the very least, we'll say. In any case, three free points for the Buffaloes. Now we fast forward to about 2:13 left in the game. Alley-oop pass from Tristan Da Silva to Cody Williams at the rim. And Condon jumps up to try to break it up. And when I say he got all ball, I mean there was maybe the most microscopic graze of contact, not from his hand, by the way, between Condon's upper arm and Cody Williams' upper arm. Their upper arms, like this part of their arm here, maybe like here or so, brushed against each other. Not the hand coming in and slapping the arm like that. No, it's not nothing like that. Their upper arms brushed against each other. Called a foul on that. Like that's one. Alex Condon's hand never even touched Cody Williams at all. No part of his arm above his elbow ever touched Cody Williams' body at all. The contact was all made from his bicep area. There was zero contact from any part of Condon above his elbow to any part of Cody Williams. Call it foul. Oh, and that was foul number five. So Alex Condon was done. He had fouled out of the game on that. Just, you know, another one where you have to look at it and go, okay, something's wrong here. Like that's not a call that anyone makes with any semblance of knowledge of the game or no vested interest. Like something smells really fishy here. You don't see that get called. It wasn't called in this game up to that point, but in any case, it was called here. So Condon unfortunately fouled out. And now we get to the game ender where Florida had clawed back into the game. They were down seven with about a minute 26 to go. Florida ties the game on the second of a couple of threes from Walter Clayton, a really deep three, but there's 6.8 seconds or so left in the game. KJ Simpson of Colorado driving the baseline. He pulls up, takes his elbow, and he shoves Zion Pullen out of the way. I mean, you guys have seen that. I don't need to react this out, but just reminding everyone, he shoves Pullen out of the way, just takes the elbow and shoves him out of the way. Which, hilariously, he mentions in the postgame presser, he slipped. Yeah, which is exactly what tends to happen when you forearm someone backwards. But in any case, no call. Should have been an offensive foul. It wasn't. Just another egregious miss. In fact, This is not a video. I can just show the plain still of this for the audience here in case you have not seen it. Here are five still shots of KJ Simpson extending his arm in a full shove into either the chin, the upper ribs, or the neck. Looks more like the upper rib cage of Zion Pullen, and pushes him backwards to magically create separation. No foul is called. Eric Curry staring right at the play. It was allowed to stand. Colorado wins. They advance. Florida goes home. Any official, of course, with a functioning pair of eyes, a basic understanding of the rules of basketball, and no vested interest in the result, would step in and call an offensive foul. This is not an accurate description of Eric Curry. So the play was allowed to stand, and that was that. So to try to unpack this in virtual video reaction form, the first thing I'll say is that, in all honesty, the bitterness, the anger, all the emotions that I was feeling at that time on behalf of the players who saw their season unjustly end is gone, because I broke my own rule of officials, which states that you must assume that what can be called against you will be called against you. Any way in which the officials can help your opponent, they will help your opponent. What can go wrong will go wrong. You have to go into every game with that mindset. You have to assume that the game is going to be adjudicated with all the fairness of a Kim family-led courtroom in North Korea. And I know that's a ridiculous comparison. I know this is just a game. I know that they're actually starving and brainwashing people there. I get that. Well aware of that. That's not the point. The point of the analogy is you have to go into every game assuming that the officials are biased and will be looking to screw you over. The onus is on you to play well enough that it doesn't matter. If you assume that the officials are going to be as fair as the officials are in North Korea, then you're going to try to win the game by 30 points, not by 2 points, and thus it's not going to matter. So Florida was in a very close game for most of the way. They let it get down to the final minute of a very close game. They weren't up by 10. They weren't up by 15 in the last couple minutes. Left it in the officials' hands. And what happens, happened. That's the rule that I've lived by for years as a Gator fan. And as a former athlete myself, you give yourself that margin for error. You don't let the officials decide it for you. Florida did that. In some games this year, like when they blew out Alabama, they blew out Auburn. No, they did that. But in this game against Colorado, they were not able to establish any breathing room late, put themselves in a hole, and what happened, happened. So to that point, a lot of people, including some Gator fans who don't like to blame the officials under any circumstances, they'll say, well, we played terrible defense. We gave up 102. And you know what? Again, on the surface, that's fair. Control what you can control. You can control whether you play good defense or not. Giving up 102 points says that we played terrible defense. And, well, that looks like we dug our own grave there. But about that, did we? Did we really play that awful defense? I mean, yes, sure. 102 points is 102 points. But were all those 102 points really our fault? Because we tried to play good defense. Alex Condon tried to break up some entry passes. He tried to block some shots. Riley Kugel tried to reject the layup attempt. Fouls were called when there was no justifiable reason to do so. I mean, those plays were clean. Those plays were ruled to be kosher for most of the season. Not in this game. I don't know how you teach that. I don't know how you coach the guys around that. Again, I'll give you the timestamps. In the second half, about 10:10 to go, about 7:43 to go, about 2:13 to go, and the final possession of the game. Go look at the full game on YouTube. Go find the game. go watch those plays. See for yourself. So to those who say play better defense, no, you're wrong. We did play good defense, at least on those possessions we did. And I have concrete evidence of that because I just gave you the timestamps for it. Now, yes, we did also give the Buffaloes way too many open looks from threes. That is a fair point. But then you realize that Florida was never actually good at defending the three-point line all year long. And to that point, you could say that this was a flawed team from the get-go, especially without Micah Hand-Lockton. But I would counter that by saying, you know what? Yeah, but despite that weakness, we were still able to overcome a double-digit deficit late in the game and come back anyway. We overcame that adversity. We overcame that weakness of ours. But again, ultimately, those who blame Florida for the loss and not the officials, ultimately, you're right, because I went against my own rule of assuming that the officials would call an even game. I went against my own rule of assuming that the referees would adjudicate this game with fairness and with impartiality. That's my fault. I should never have assumed that. For example, Florida went 11 for 25 from three, which is pretty good. But at the same time, Florida controlled the destiny of each and every one of those three-pointers that it launched. And yes, the stats say you're not going to shoot 50% from three, and that 11 for 25 is really good. But yet, Florida players ultimately control the outcome of each and every one of those three-pointers that they launch. The officials don't control that. The officials aren't the ones playing defense. The officials aren't the ones shooting it. The officials aren't moving the baskets. It's Florida players. It's the technique that they've learned as little kids. And it's a hoop. And sometimes over or around defenders and their outstretched hands. That's it. Had Florida made any of the 14 threes it missed, or more safely, had Florida made any two of the 14 three-pointers that it missed, the Gators win this game. And as a former Florida coach once said, a former failed Florida coach once said, you have to overcome the adversity on the field, or in this case, the adversity on the court. And speaking of Will Muschamp, in addition to creating that great line about overcoming adversity, he's also relevant here for another reason, because for everything I just said, about how you have to assume the officials are going to screw you over at any given opportunity, Muschamp is also an example of how when you repeatedly mess up, there are consequences for it. And there were a few losers on social media who thought that I took things too far by informing everybody of the names of the officials, which I will again point out is publicly accessible information. I got it right from the same spot that you could have gotten it from yourself, which was the box score of the game. But also, I feel amazed that there are people out there who genuinely believe that, oh, well, they were bad, but what are you going to do? Officials messing up the game is just part of it. The human element is just part of the game. To which I say, okay, first of all, I was pretty clear that I don't condone doing anything crazy and taking things way, way, way too far with this information. Like, there were people who dug up a lot more information about these people that I'm not going to share the information of for very obvious reasons. But those types of people and those types of activities, I am not in favor of. Second of all, guess what? There are consequences to messing up in life. I really wish that for me, that wasn't the case. I really wish I could live a life where there were zero consequences to anything that I did wrong, because that would be awesome. I could just be completely reckless and do whatever the hell I please and never have to face the music for it. But that's not how the world works. It's not how anything works in society. You mess up, you pay consequences for it. And I also have to point out, I feel like it's pretty clear that the people who are saying this also would not grant me a lack of consequences for mistakes that I made had I made them public to them. It's very amusing how that little bit of irony plays itself out in real time. But also, no, there definitely were consequences. There definitely were consequences, because Eric Curry, the referee responsible for the worst of the officiating in that game, was barred from officiating the rest of the NCAA tournament. there wasn't exactly a public axe dropping ceremony. There wasn't a public you're fired, but officials, much like the teams that they are presiding over on the court, are graded by their performances, and the best referees move on in the NCAA tournament and get to officiate more games, which of course comes with additional money in their bank accounts. And to the surprise of nobody who watched that game, Eric Curry was not selected to move on, which does take money out of his pocket, does ding him in the future. This will go on his permanent record. And because he is paid, because officials are paid per game, that is money that he cost himself. And while no, that does not undo the injustice of Friday's game, it is a nice postscript and it is a nice reminder that yes, indeed, there are consequences. There are repercussions attached for just being plain garbage at your job. And I think that's important to learn. Even if there was one clear loser of this exchange, Friday was a double knockout blow where both the Gators as a team and the official who murked them were done. So, yes, it sucks that Florida had to go down by the hand of Eric Curry. I think that if there was a very good chance had Florida and Colorado played a brand new basketball game with legitimately unbiased officials, Colorado could have won. There was a reason I was scared of them and preferred to play Boise State. There was a reason I wanted the Broncos and not the Buffaloes. Colorado's a good team and very easily could have beaten us in a game fair and square. But that's not how this game is going to go down. And I will give a tip of the cap to Chris Restatter, the national coordinator of officials, for stepping in and at least bringing Eric Curry down with us. It sucks that we had to go down and our season had to go down in flames like that. But I do give Chris Rastatter credit for stepping in and at least bringing Eric Curry down with us. So what have we learned from this? What's the moral of this story aside from what I just went through about assuming the worst of the officials? Well, go into a game expecting to get screwed over. Aside from that too, I think there's validity to Florida being terrible defensively this season. Even if the season-ending loss itself was more bad officiating and less bad defense, that's still a pretty clear universal truth that now we have to go address in the transfer portal. And Todd Golden, to his credit, and his staff have wasted no time going out and doing work in that portal. According to at least one account on social media, at GatorsSZN, by the way, I know him personally, and I can vouch that he does have some legitimate connections. According to him, Florida has already reached out to Clifford Omorui, a former center for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who could provide some strong rebounding and just a good paint presence, period, overall for the Gators to replace the now dearly departed Tyree Samuel. Florida also has reached out to a couple of guards, according to Gators Season. UT Martin guard Jordan Sears, originally from Daytona, Florida, bring him back home, as well as DeShane Montgomery from Mount St. Mary's. Any of these three guys would be excellent plug-and-play pieces next year. At the very least, they'd be excellent depth pieces for the Gators, if not starting next year. And now, unfortunately, that we have to bring this back up again, but the reason we are so crippled, or not crippled, the reason that we are so forced to go and land the jackpot in the transfer portal with the big guys, aside from the fact that we're still unsure of the status of Micah Handlott and with his broken bone, the reason we have to go portal so heavily is the same reason why I continue to harp on Mike White, also known as Mid-Major Mike, also known as our former coach, our previous Gator coach, because for those who don't know the story, back when he was still the coach of Florida, the Gators had the inside track to land a big guy out of Spartanburg, South Carolina, named PJ Hall, who, if you've been paying attention this March Madness, is currently a star for the Clemson Tigers. PJ Hall, yes, he did grow up near Clemson, but he was Florida's to lose. He grew up a Gator fan. His sister, Thayer Hall, starred on the Florida volleyball team. He wanted to play for Florida. Mike White didn't see it the same way. Mike White, then the coach, passed on him and said, nah, I'll hold that spot for Osai Osifo. That didn't work very well. That didn't go the way that Mike White and Florida fans hoped it would go. I think a lot of Florida fans at the time knew that that was not a good idea, but that didn't work out the way that Mike White thought it would. And just one of the many reasons why I've continued to harangue Mike White, another one of which is he's at Georgia, so to hell with Georgia, but we're still paying for that. We're still suffering from Mike White's stupidity and his ineptitude. I mean, thinking back to the 20-some years I've been following Gator basketball, that's got to be one of the worst evals I think I've ever seen from a Gator coach. And now, as PJ Hall contemplates coming back for a fifth year at Clemson, he's unlikely to hit the transfer portal. He either takes his fifth year at Clemson via the COVID waiver or he goes pro. But now, with all due respect to Thomas Houck and Alex Condon, as those guys have more than lived up to their billing, but now we have to go portal to find at least two, if not more, portal big men this cycle, talking either stretch three fours or just fours or fives, or else this team is going to look a lot like Golden's first year, where Colin Castleton was a very good player, but he just had no help. And we continue to suffer the consequences of not being able to land anyone in the portal, not being able to rebound all year long. And on that note, looking big picture here, Todd Golden's second season at Florida overall has to be considered a success. Micah Hanlockton's injury hurt. Definitely some suspect results here and there. Losing to Vanderbilt was really bad. Also, a very ugly scare game against ECU that we survived, but did not inspire a lot of confidence. And even the Michigan game, hindsight has not done that game any favors, knowing how bad Michigan is or was this year. They had to fire their coach, Juwan Howard. But generally speaking, for the most part, this team took care of business. Generally this speaking, this team did not lose the games they were not supposed to lose. They picked up some nice wins on top of it, and they made some good number-related talking points possible. They made for a nice talk about the trajectory of the program. 11-7 in the SEC, that's an improvement from 9-9 in the SEC in Golden's first year. They finished top 30 in both Net and KenPom, also finished top 30 in Bart Torvik's advanced stats metric site. All great, all an improvement from his first year. Now the key is, can the Gators continue on this current trajectory? There's no doubt that the trajectory is good, but can we continue this rise? I do like this trajectory, but can we keep it going for a third year? There is a long offseason ahead of us now. Much, much work to do in that offseason. Before we talk about any of that, I have to end the show with this. I gave just one example of Mike White's ineptitude, of which there were many. And over time, the Mike White cycle became very familiar. Recruit fairly well, start the year with a bang by beating a good team in a preseason tournament or a showcase event or something. Lose to a terrible team at home in December or early January to undo that momentum, and then play out the string and trade in some good wins for awful losses, the worst of which Texas Southern, a winless SWAC team, but also included in their top or sub top 125 net teams like Georgia and South Carolina, and a Mississippi team down three starters, and eventually finish 9-9, 10-8, or 11-7 in the SEC. Somewhere between a 6 or a 10 seed in the NCAA tournament, win the first game, lose the second game, like clockwork every single year, finish between 5th and 8th in the SEC, lose a round of 32, year after year after year after year. And it got to the point where a lot of Gator fans, myself included, checked out. I mean, yes, sure, of course we would continue to root for the Gators. We would continue to root for the players and the logo, in all kinds of weather, because that's what that means. Nobody switched teams. Nobody looked for another college basketball team to root for. But, you know, they exist. They're just another Gator team, like Gator soccer or Gator track or Gator swimming. You know, we wish them well. We want them to win. But if they don't, whatever. There's baseball and softball coming up next. Who cares? Losses didn't sting anymore towards the end of Mike White's tenure. I mean, if you're going to watch Yonte Maiden hit four uncontested threes in a row, You're going to watch Chris Silva walk off dunk you to death because he gets behind the entire defense and you put nobody on the inbounds, man. You watch Texas Southern come in and desecrate the Gators' home floor. There's just no reason to get mad anymore. It is what it is. You know, it just, it's an unserious basketball program with an ending that you know in advance. It sucks, but that's just what it was. This loss at the hands of Colorado, on the other hand, or should I say at the hands of Eric Curry, it hurt. It stung. And you know what? Maybe Todd Golden isn't ultimately the guy to win championships at Florida, but it's something different than what we knew would not be resulting in championships. And yes, Scott Strickland's hand was forced here. The how or why doesn't matter. The fact is there is new energy with Gator basketball. There's one where losses sting, and there's one in which there's reason to care again. And even though Todd Golden's second year did resemble, at least from a number standpoint, the end of Mike White's tenure, by which I mean the last four seasons in a row of Mike White's tenure at Florida, even the last 5 years in a row, the trajectory is different and the feel is different. It feels like there could be something special here. That's our show. Be sure to like, to subscribe, comment your thoughts below. Go Gators in all kinds of weather. We will stick together for FLORIDA.